So what we've done then is we've looked at existence as a conclusion or as a connection or as a concomitant of spirituality. That spirituality without materiality really is meaningless. And the explanation as to why spirituality even arises comes about when we understand that materiality arises through the creation of individuality and individuals arising. Without individuals, there's no individual particles, there's no individual matter, there's no individual beings. So the arising of the material world is the arising of individual particles of matter, individual atoms, individual electrons. And all of this is extremely important in understanding how this all works. During all this, in explanation of the physical, one thing I want to remind you is I also explained to you about how light itself, how light works and how time travel works in terms of this formula that I told you about, where b squared minus a squared equals the hypotenuse of a triangle, where b and a are the sides of the triangle, and how that's a space-time triangle, and how for light, we have that no time passes as light seems to move from one place to another. With this new understanding about the role of mind and consciousness in the universe, science itself may be shifting to accommodate it in a new way. I'm not the only one thinking like this, that the seat of consciousness or the soul or the essential self now appears to be directly involved with time, possibly with its very emergence as something which we can maybe even objectify. Consciousness has been explored by a number of scientists, and I've just mentioned a few physicists like Henry Stapp and Amit Goswami and Roger Penrose, just to mention a few, that consciousness acts or has an effect on physical matter by making choices that then become manifest. It now seems that that's the current thinking. It now appears that such action cannot simply take place mechanistically. It now appears that there must be a chooser or a subject who affects not only the physical world, but the brain and the nervous system. Physicists like Stapp believe that this chooser arises in the brain through past conditioning. Penrose thinks that this action arises in a non-algorithmic manner, in a way that might be thought about in terms of Platonic thinking, as Plato might have thought about it, that it's not through the action of any mathematical formula or any computer-like process. So there are many different ways of looking at this process, but we're all basically struggling with and working to understand the very essence of what I'm talking about in this program, that once we can understand that reality is a question of our participation with it rather than it absolutely existing outside of us, that opens the door to time travel, because we then see that time, or the marking of time, is one real thing after another, one observer effect after another, one consciousness acting after another, and this then gives us the line of time that we have normally, usually, and before quantum physics, accepted as being the only way to think about this. Because we are embodied, and thus we are limited by space and time, and because we're sentient, we tend to lose the experience of residing in the timeless, spaceless realm. We tend to lose the experience of getting in the boat and moving down the river of time. We tend to forget that. We tend to only look at the objective world as being the only thing real. Even bringing up the concept boggles the mind and raises possibly hackles of suspicion and skepticism. For a long time, spiritual practices, including meditation and various forms of ritual, have been utilized to break us free of these limitations. And what I suggested to you in this session was that the very sense of ritual that's important is to go back in time to when that ritual was first enacted. And that's really what ritual is about. Spiritual teachers, realizing the difficulty of seeing beyond the everyday reality that we normally live in, ask us to practice techniques known experientially that will assist us in this endeavor. Paradoxically, even though we call it an endeavor, the techniques are designed to break us out of endeavoring that has become so habitual to us. In other words, these are endeavors which are non-endeavoring. This is work which is non-work. I even once heard the Dalai Lama say that the reason he spends so much time in daily meditation was that he needed to do this in order to practice what it's going to be like when he dies. He said, "My daily practice is preparation for death through meditation, to make the separation of the body and the mind. Unless you reach the deepest level, you cannot separate this mind and the body. And when you reach this deepest level, it's that point that they can separate. Then I even go deeper, deeper, deeper to the deepest, which is, for me, clear light. Sometimes I joke. In 24 hours, I experience death and rebirth 7 times. Then when the actual death happens, this practice becomes very useful." So think about what I'm telling you. I've been giving you a little look at this practice that the Dalai Lama does in terms of the state of being in which you are unfocused and the state of being in which you develop a focus. And I used as an example for that the waving of your hand or the wiggling of your finger. Like death and deep meditation, this form of practice of time travel frees you from any limitations of space and time. In other words, while the rest of us may be holding on to our timekeeping and our space awareness in the usual manner, like the mu mesons that I told you about before that speed through the universe or speed through our atmosphere at near light speed, that they may ride for years of our time but less than a microsecond of theirs. In other words, as long as we understand that time is not absolute, we in meditation get free of that altogether. This respite from the space-time continuum allows us to move backward in time and to even revisit past errors. It allows us to forgive ourselves and others because we see that the other is nothing more than ourself. It offers us a free or a fresh and a new life-affirming quality to our everyday existence. Perhaps, maybe more importantly, while engaged in this type of travel, you can slow your body's aging process simply because the mind has relaxed its concern with creating an objective world arising from the probability curves of habitual behavior that you've indulged yourself in. You're moving back in time. You're shifting into more possibilities. So therefore, when you come back to the present time with these new possibilities, the probability curve will be shifted automatically. By using meditation or yoga techniques, for example, it may not seem that you're doing this, but you are really freeing yourself from time. With practice, as Ramana Maharshi was able to show us, you will be able to see into the past or the future as well as beyond your own immediate environment, your own immediate neighborhood. The key, as Maharshi would indicate, to time travel seems to be in the surrender of egoic patterns, the breaking of those patterns, not with a hammer, but with a simple relaxation, a simple letting go of focusing on that particular aspect of yourself. Traveling to the future is also possible this way by strengthening your focus, becoming, in a sense, more egoic, but not in a negative sense, in a more positive sense. So, to conclude this, let's consider what Patanjali has said about time. In the 4th chapter of the Yoga Sutra, he says to us that the past and the future exist as different conditions of the eternal now. Here's how he put it. Pure soul awareness is the true yogi. It is changeless and non-moving, its form having accomplished its own intelligence, takes on the identity of knowing. Time, the sequence of the modifications of the ego mind, likewise end, terminate, giving place to the eternal now. Consequently, total liberation becomes possible when these three qualities of the material world, light, inertia, and vibration, no longer exercise any hold over the yogi, as well as having discharged the fourfold aims, which are duties to self, family, society, and country. Once established in one's own true nature, the power of pure soul awareness, the ability to be beyond space and time, there is nothing left to be done.
This concludes Dr. Quantum Presents Do-It-Yourself Time Travel with Fred Allen Wolf. Music by Nawang Ketchog. Available through Sounds True. For more information on Fred Allen Wolf, please visit www.fredallenwolf.com. And if you would like additional copies of this audio learning series or to receive a complete catalog of wisdom for the inner life, please contact Sounds True, www.soundstrue.com, or call us at 1-800-333-9185, or write the Sounds True catalog, P.O. Box 8010, Boulder, Colorado 80306. Thank you for listening.